herzlich willkommen beim Lichtbringer Podcast. So schön, dass du heute wieder dabei bist. Nimm einen tiefen Atemzug und entspann dich in die Energie. Welcome in this very special podcast episode. Today, I have a very dear guest with us, a guest who is very experienced in terms of connection with the spirit world. He has been in contact with the spirit world for over 50 years since he's been a child and has given thousands, if not tens of thousands, readings, connections to the deceased. And he has a very powerful message, actually, a lot of very powerful messages. I had already the honor to be working with him many times, actually, producing online courses, seeing him on stage directly. We've had a good time also recording the courses. It was not always just like hard work, but there was a lot of fun as well. And I think sometimes the spirit world brings in that fun as well. And I think that's one of the things I like so much about our guest today, that he has kept his fun in his life and he's grounded despite his very strong connection to the spirit world. So without any further ado, welcome Gordon Smith to the podcast.
Thank you, Jan. It's always a pleasure to come and share any of my knowledge or experience with people who are interested enough to want to hear it.
Yes, and I think those who are listening right now are at least interested. I think some of them have already have a contact with the spirit world and would declare it as such. Yeah. Some probably had already an experience and would not declare it as such. Yeah. And I think you have encountered a lot of people in this situation. So how can we know it was the spirit world and how does it show up for us?
Well, there's two different ways it can appear. You may experience an objective spirit contact where you see spirit and feel their presence very much there. And that, when it happens, is undeniable. Either you are living in an alternate universe or there's another universe overshadowing yours in that moment. There's a reality to an objective spirit contact. But it's the subjective spiritual contact that confuses people and causes them doubt. Is it my mind? Well, that's the biggest question I'm ever asked. How do you know it's not your mind? And the simple answer to that is, it is your mind. The spirit world don't contact your body. Your body's a piece of matter that does matter. But it's your mind that the spirit world contact. And this means that you have an inner knowing, a subjective knowing, something within that becomes awake. I know that my mother's going to ring the phone in 2 minutes. I can tell something bad's about to happen. That's the inner you, your mind is waking up. The problem people have when they get that experience, they assume, huh, I contact the spirit world. No, it happens. And it can be random like that and then not for years. For some, it becomes a pathway of life. And you overcome your doubts. You work a plan through your life, a progress to face your doubt. Well, it happened. So where do I fit that in my world that I live in? And I would say that the majority of people always argue with their own logic. But logic says that can't happen. But who says logic's correct? Logic's a measurement that science tells us is within the bounds of measurement and reality. But what is reality and how does it differ for each person? Your logic and my logic can be completely different.
So there's a difference between the objective experience and the subjective
yes.
meaning or experience of it. And that's where the doubt comes in. And for yes. some, it's a path for the life to overcome that doubt, not to argue too much with the mind.
Yeah.
And that raises another question, since you also said some get access to that experience with the spirit world. Is it that we get in contact willingly with the spirit world, or is it that we create the access, we become receptive of perception of these realms, or is it the same?
it's much more simple than that. The spirit world isn't a place that's far away. It's not a planet in the solar system. It's here. We are in the spirit world, but we are at this moment manifest in a physical being that is working with the denser elements of mind. Worry, fear, concern, even drive to become things and all of this. So this is all part of the human mind. So I've said this before, but let me see if I can articulate it better. If you see your life right now in this physical world, I'm Gordon. So right now I'm talking to Jan and we're on the same frequency. Everything in our worlds have made it that we actually connect. But even as we do, between Jan and I, there is space. You can choose to understand that space is empty or that it's full and that there's things happening. So the spirit world are part of that space. Now, the moment I open up my mind to that and allow that to be a reality, then I have switched on the radio within me that picks up the messages from space, from atmosphere. So I'm no longer now recording on my lower level mind of doubt and fear and all the different things and negativities. I am now accepting that, wow, I'm in a different reality. So the spirit world, I don't go to them or they don't go to me. We become connected through vibration and frequency, like radio waves and a radio.
So it's the communication with the spirit world without any words, just frequency?
Well, words would be probably my mind interpreting the sensation of spirit. They said they were happy. Maybe they didn't say anything, but that's how I tell myself it. So the words I hear are from me based on a movement that happens when the spirit world touch my mind. And that would be the same when people subjectively have clairvoyance. I see your grandfather standing behind you. He's not as tall as you and he has curly white hair. I tell you all of this. I don't see him, but my mind interprets him. So I am, if you like, the reporter on what's happening between my mind and the spirit world. I'm a voice, an instrument in this world that can record. And that really is what a medium is, someone who stands between.
And to me, that seems like a key to this connection with the spirit world, because a lot of mediums that I've met do have the message that we are connected with the spirit world, even if we know about it or not, about being in contact with it, or as you just said, being reporter, or one could also say the translator of these frequencies, I think is crucial, isn't it? So maybe the term mediumship expands a little. Could one say we're all mediums? Some already discovered, some not.
We all have the potential to be mediums. Some will have the potential like Beethoven would have with the ability to produce music at a very high level. Whereas I, if it was music I was connected to, would be able to play chopsticks on a piano. It wouldn't mean I didn't have the musicality that Beethoven was born with. He would just have it in abundance and I wouldn't. Mediumship's the same, and it's easily compared with the arts. So some people are born dancers and their expressive movements are there within them. They don't even need to be taught. Some people find it clumsy or awkward to move when music plays. And it's how we relate to sound and vibration. So mediumship's the same. So if you have a mind that just says no to anything, that's what you will say to anything, whether it be mediumship or great art. Isn't that a well-constructed poem? No, it's just words. So that's a very dense logic, which keeps itself in a safe place of reality. And in actual fact, it's keeping itself within a boundary and not allowing the mind to breathe in its own freedom and space. So when the mind has the chance to examine greater distances away from logic, you know, as a child, children's fantasy can take them way beyond logic, and that's wonderful. That's why they're not logical. Children see, feel, and experience a world that we don't, because logic demands that we need to measure everything. But that's not how it's done. That's not how it was done. This shouldn't happen. And it's a little bit like, how do we know unless something different happens? That there's something different. Humanity sees itself as this great thing. From the spirit world, or even from a medium's point of view, humanity is the smallest and most dense rung of the spiritual planes. This, when people talk about hell or, you know, places like that, this is it. There's nothing more dense to the spirit world than to carry this around. But more than this, the spirit is carrying this mind that becomes laden with fear because of this body. This is the greatest addiction human beings will ever have. This, I can't let go of it. I need to feed it all the time. I need to do things to it all the time. Understanding that you're a spirit and this is a garment you're wearing, and recognizing that you can choose to care for that garment and eat well, sleep well, exercise, that's your prerogative. Some people like to dress beautifully for the world. Some people like to be healthy to show the world. That's absolutely your destiny. But at the end of the day, it is a garment and it will be discarded, and your spirit will move on with your memories, your experiences, everything that you've been a part of will go with you. And that garment will remain here where it belongs, back to Earth. That's it. Quite simple.
It is quite simple for our mind to understand, and yet I think it's something different to embody it fully. Like, you cannot die. Yes, your physical body can die, but your spirit can't. Thus, our fear of fully living our potential also birth at the same time when our fear of the death vanishes?
Yes. I think that's one of the things I can truly say I have experienced in this life, was being born into a family that was tough and aggressive, and I was a very sensitive child. I was afraid of all the aggression and different things. And I suppose in my mid-teens to 20, around about that time, I just worried and feared about everything. And then when I was a very young man, I had a child, a son, and all my fears were then projected onto that baby. He was only a baby, but I just produced everything I had in fear. What if he dies? What if he gets sick? What if I die? And all of a sudden, my mind became this turmoil of fear. So what you're doing is you're living in fear of death, of loss, of inability to control. And it was round about that time I had an amazing spiritual experience that sent me on my spiritual journey to look for answers to these things. How can I overcome fear? How can I actually take control back of my life without going to bed and worrying the entire evening or night about what will happen to my child? So I think all parents will experience a bit of that. They will experience that. But for me, being very sensitive, it felt like a nightmare, living in a nightmare. And I was never outside my thinking. My thinking ruled my life. Even when I was at work, my thinking was still going. But during the development that I did with the spirit world, all of a sudden, I started to realize I actually have very little ability to affect that. But the one thing I can affect is me. So I started to work on me and recognize the things I could change, work on them, and accept the things I couldn't change and live with them. And one of them was death, the biggest one. So I learned not to be afraid of death. And immediately that showed me I didn't need to be afraid of life. So when you lose your fear of dying, you lose your fear of living. And that means you genuinely experience happiness. Now, that's, I'm not the Dalai Lama. I can't hold that expression of happiness all the time or as long as His Holiness could. But I have an abundance of it within me. I have the ability to affect other people's happiness because of the creation of this inner self being allowed out. So yes, you can actually live a very balanced, contented life with the knowledge that death is part of life. It's not the opposite of it. Death is part of it. So you couldn't be you if you hadn't died before. Mm-hmm. You won't be whoever you'll be if you don't die this time. So death is a part of life. It's a stage. And really, when you see it as such a thing, it doesn't then become a concern. And it's not nice when we lose somebody in this world, you feel it as a human being. But as a medium, I've learned it touches you in the human way and maybe irrigates some of the emotions within you. It stirs up things. But then there's a reason for that. And that is to end the journey you've had with that person. These emotions come up to say, that file is now being concluded. And your emotional outbursts are a response to the death of a loved one. They're not sadness. They are an actual, if you like, karmic reaction. And if you don't love somebody, there's no reaction. But if you do love somebody, there's sometimes a very great outpouring of emotion. But then again, emotion and grief is the price you pay for loving. Loving's not free. Loving costs. You're laughing at it. Because you have a child.
Yeah. There's so many things, so many precious things you just said. And I want to bring a bit light into one aspect of losing the fear of living when losing the fear of dying, because it seems like this experience doesn't directly appear the first time we get in contact with the spirit world, even not the first time we meet our own spirit guide or our team. It seems that still something holds us back or keeps us focused in the material realm. And what just came to mind when you talked is it a kind of a stepping stone on this way of losing the fear of death when some roles we had of us, some images of us, the people pleaser, maybe even like big roles like the father or the whatever we put on limitations on ourselves, when these begin to die in a sense, our limited versions of ourselves die, so we die into a more wider range of being.
Well, I mean, for me, I can always be a father, but always be free of the need to control the lives of my two sons. I have no need to even interfere in their lives as they've grown. I'm always here if they need me. But these would be in human ways. I mean, spiritually, I want to see the people I love grow and not be restricted by their role. I mean, some, and I think this applies maybe to a lot of mothers, and it did when I grew up. It was a different world then, Jan, because mothers stayed at home with children. Fathers went to work. So mother was a big part of her life, her world. She was her world. Father was a person who we very rarely saw. So in that sense, your mother was everything in your world. She really was. When I look back, I realize that's all my mother really was. She never got a chance to be this wonderful singer, which she was. She was a dancer when she was young, and she became a mother and didn't change till she died. And you think, well, was that her choice to come into this world and just mother all of us? Well, there was lots of us. Is that what she chose? And if that's the case, she did a good job. And if that was her wish to come into this world and be a mum, she was a mum. She was a tough mum. She was a hard mum, but she was a mum. She was a protector. So when you look at that role, there's other roles I look at in people I know that you think, I have a brother who's a tremendous artist. It just doesn't have the ambition. He just now has no drive. So the human self has to fulfill certain things, or you're living a very non-experimental life. And it's a little bit like, it's okay to be a father, a son, a wife, a daughter. All of these things are part of who you are in this program that you've chosen. But just be the best you can be at it. And I think one of the loveliest things is try not to trouble yourself. People cause themselves lots of trouble by overthinking and always trying to be good at things. And I get really, I just ignore the people who are always good, because you can't be good. You either are or you're not. But don't this, but I'm really good and I'm going to be good at this and I'm going to be good. No, just be. The stress that people put on themselves. I watch young people on TV today, sports people, and they're all attending psychiatrists, psychologists, because they didn't win a gold medal. What's that about? Now, that is an unshaped mind. That's a mind that is completely troubled, because they trouble themselves every day. Oh, I've got to be better. I've got to be better. Now, that's obsessive. That's not enjoying sport or anything in life. So don't trouble yourself is what I would say to anybody listening. Stop troubling yourselves. If you're going to become good at anything, become good at not over-trying. This trying thing, you know, it doesn't take a lot to be good. One of my sayings that I've said to many people, don't try to be good, or don't try to be right. Try to do the right thing. It's two different commodities. Trying to sound right or be right gives you a one-upmanship on people, but trying to do right is compassionate. And that's something that I feel, when you know that, then it doesn't really matter about being right. I couldn't care less if I'm right or wrong, or if I'm judged good or bad or anything, because it just makes me smile when people say, but could you do this better or that? I don't know. I'm quite happy with being who I am. And yeah, I think it's the mind. Everything is mind, Jan. And when people realize that, I wonder how many people got up this morning and went to work, but didn't even notice how they were traveling to work, that their mind was controlling their morning and will continue to control their day. And will continue to control their evening, and what happened in the morning and the day will affect the night. And then they'll go to bed with all the same troubles, and they won't even have looked at the world, smelled what's in the air, seen what's around them, touched another thing and felt the wow from it, or even just listened to the sound of their day. So when people think they're alive in this body, they're not. To be alive in this body means that you're connected to everything. You know, every day I give myself a little exercise for fun, never for points or to become better, to use all of my senses at least once a day where I take in moments, just a moment. Come on, everybody, just take a moment to look at where you are and breathe, and you go, oh, wow. And what are the sounds around me, and what colours stand out in my eyes? And then think how lucky you are to have all your senses, if you do have. For a moment, think, wow, look what I've got, and why am I not using them? Why am I living in a very closed mind that's dominating my life? No. You know that term, getting out of your mind, which is mostly associated with drugs and hallucinogenics? Well, it shouldn't be. Getting out of your mind is what I've been doing all my life without the use of drugs, just feeling the experience of the light of the world. And that light is what makes me see And the frequencies within that light world would make me hear and smell. And in my body, I have all these wonderful kind of goings on that allow me to taste things. And of course, the most beautiful of all our senses when we realize it's touch. And only a blind person could tell you how important that actually is, to touch something and to know it just by touching it. And these are the things that are important to you every day, not how will I earn more money? How will I stop this? How will I start that? It may be necessary to plan things, but always remember to experience a bit of the world that you're living in. It's incredibly beautiful. And so are you. Everybody, you need to feel part of that beautiful world, not part of the shrinking mind. That's not a nice place to live. So get out of it.
Yeah. It's almost like getting out of your mind enables you to involve yourself deeper with in life. Like what came to mind is like most engaged, least attached. You can still play the roles and you do a good job in them, the best you can, but you're not attached to them. You kind of have a space in between where you don't need to do that, otherwise you feel bad, or you need to be that person, otherwise you feel bad. You have the choice either or. And it seems like this is one of the gifts that the spirit world has for us, that our experience of being a spirit, of having that freedom in a certain realm, allows us to also live that in our physical form more.
Well, understanding consciousness, I think, is one of the important things. Having an awareness that you're a conscious being. And that means more than just the one role. But each role that you have chosen is for a purpose. You know, and there'll be people who contradict that or argue with it. Yeah, but why would my parents be bad to me? Well, that's part of the role that you've all chosen. Only at the end of that journey or in an awakening moment will you learn that. We're not here to know everything. We're here to learn things. Who goes to school to know things? No one. You go to school to learn. So we come to this world to learn, not to know. Knowing's what happened when we've done it or when we've had moments of enlightenment. And that would be like passing your exams. You're still at school to do next year's exams. So don't think you're coming here to know things. You're coming here to learn things. Now, a beautiful way it was put to me recently was that you imagine that if you have a spirit guide or guardian or whoever you see up there as being your teacher or the one who guides you through this life. So I'll call it my spirit guide. So for them, they were with us in the spirit world before we made this incarnation. So that's a little bit like a parent taking the child to school and leaving them there for the first time. So your guide is the one that's saying, oh my God, they're looking at your life and guiding it. And though you feel disconnected from the spirit world and you're in this new school, this earth with all these other children, these people. But know this, when the school bell rings, that guardian will be there to welcome you when you come out. So for them, when we go home, when we pass from this world, they are there with their arms open wide, saying, well done. That was a good class. And you see it like that. It unfolds like that for you, where you just know I'm being loved and looked after. And when you know that you are loved, then you can love yourself. And this is a thing a lot of people spend no time doing. You know, people go off to meditation classes and they meditate to be quiet and silent and still, which is fine. But silence is something that you're a part of anyway. Stillness is a wonderful achievement, and it really is. But learning that as we reach such beautiful moments of balance and contentment, every time we do that, we affect our soul. And our soul becomes more pure and more alive in this world. And this is why we do this, not to say to people, I'm a good meditator, but for people to go, you're a happy person, or you're balanced. You don't need to tell people that. It is seen within you, because what you create in your meditative worlds is a version of you that actually is better in this world for anyone, for you or for anyone who comes into your radius. And that's why we try to strive to bring light to the mind. And remember, even your body, this old matter here, is mind. This is living physical consciousness. If you do out, you'll feel that it's conscious. So we remember that. We don't ignore the body while we're in it. We know that the body is something that we borrow or that we use, but we treat it well while we're here. But equally, we try to show people that it's what radiates from us when we are at one. Body, mind, and soul. When that beautiful trinity is achieved, then nothing is not accomplished. You've accomplished everything. And then you just try to live out the next part of your life balanced and following the trust and the flow of life. If anybody asks me, what's your plans? I have none. I am my plans, and whatever happens, happens, which is fantastic. Took a while to get rid of all that rubbish when I was young, but it's nice to know that it can happen and does happen.
So many people go to the spirit world when they first learn about it, hear about it, have experiences about it as a source of guidance, as a source of clarity, and also as a source of healing. And I've witnessed quite many people, especially in parts of their lives where they don't know where to go, or they become desperate because a lot of things they try don't work anymore. They desperately want to get in contact with the spirit world and the healing powers it holds. But I also see a bit of an unhealthy dependency. How do you see that?
Well, again, it's like anything. That becomes obsessive and needy. So, you know, as a medium myself, if people come to me for help, I will help them, but I will encourage them not to go looking for help more than they need it. That then is the dependency. So when you get help, you then need to help people to help themselves. So if somebody is trying to make contact with the spirit world and it's not working, stop trying. That's the first thing. Because you're just going to get yourself deeper and deeper tangled in your own self-deprecations. Is it me? Is it the spirit world? Who doesn't love me? Do I not love? So all of that noise in the head needs to stop. And that's the same for anything, you know. It's like learning. You know, there's a great term at the moment, Jan, that people are using, and it's an annoying term for me. Attachments. Do I have attachments attached to me? No. Why would you? What is that? It's silly. And it's people's way of saying things like, I can clear all your attachments, which gives them power over people. Okay? So here's the thing. We attach to the spirit world. They don't attach to us. And there's no bad spirits. So what is all that about? These are creations and fantasies that people have. Oh, but my friend did have a bad spirit because she lost her job, her child got sick and all of this. And you say, but that's just life. That's not a bad spirit. That's just a difficult part of your karma you're working through. And when you learn that and stop all this outer world fantasies that you cannot really control, the whole idea is my remedy, nil. By mind. Sit still. Learn to relax, not to meditate. Meditation will cause you fantasy at that point. You're ungrounded. Get yourself sitting on a cushion on the floor or on a hard chair and just learn to breathe. Nothing else. breathe, hold it, release it. Breathe, hold it, release it. Become good at practicing that before you try to do anything else. How can the spirit world contact a mind that is constantly active and obsessing and complaining and self-deprecating? No. They need a quiet mind to contact. So the relaxation practice will learn to bring balance and quiet to the mind. It's in the quiet mind that we hear the spirit world, not in the noisy mind.
And I think you just outlined one of the biggest blocks people have into getting into contact with them, not being grounded, having a very noisy mind.
Yeah.
A lot of people want to open the third eye, always moving upward, but maybe a stable base.
You know,
it's awesome.
Again, a lot of this stuff comes from Buddhism, Hinduism, things like that, where these things were practiced by enlightened mind. So you've got the man or woman in the street who all of a sudden thinks they can walk into a yoga class and in one session open up the third eye and activate their kundalini and have all these wonderful things. Now, I would say that would take many, many, many episodes of living and dying before you could achieve such things. But being Western and modern, people assume they can buy it and they can have it. And that's just not the case. Where somebody may get one really nice inner vision, that's because we have an imagination. And our imagination's real. And that's where visions play out, in your imagination. So that's not really the third eye opening, but people assume it is. I mean, the third eye opening is mind-blowing. So don't try and achieve things like that when you know what it would take to achieve them. Try and achieve a nice, light mental state during a practice of yoga or meditation. Don't try and become a guru all in one day or an avatar. Respect yourself and respect the fact that every time you have a nice, light experience, that's a beautiful thing to achieve. Don't try and be God when you're just a practicing nun or monk. Be that being and enjoy the experience of it. That's why we choose to come here. So it's like teaching people not to run before they can walk. And don't take all these Eastern terms and try to turn them into like super things. You know, oh my God, my kundalini's activated. Do people even know what that means? They don't. You know, or tantric, the word tantric, it simply means wow. That's what tantric means. You've had a wow moment in your life. When your child is born, that's tantric. That, you can't put words on it. That's a tantric experience. It's nothing sexual. You know, and anybody who does have that when they're having sex, good luck to them. But that, for me, a tantric moment is a wow moment. That, not to me, that's actually what it means. In the same way, all of these terms. So, what I'm meaning is, you don't have to be seen as some great guru to teach yourself how to love and how to live well. You do not need to achieve Buddhahood to understand how to be happy in this life. You can do that as you. And that's great news. And it means that people don't distress themselves by saying, I'm not good enough, I'm not good enough. Look at the message you send yourself when you say that. That's the first thing you need to learn. Stop talking to yourself when you're telling yourself negative things. Nil by mind. Shh, is what I say.
Thank you. Which connects back to the point of not trying.
Yes.
And then other experiences might appear without trying.
Yeah.
They may be even more likely to appear than when desperately trying something because I want to get something out of it. So maybe some of us need to loosen the grip a bit of trying to get in contact with the spirit world, or the next level I observe a lot is like getting in contact with like masters, or archangels or something like the then I can achieve even more. We project the human achievement game.
And I think as human beings, people need to grade things. They like to grade things. But that comes back to measurement and restriction. Every time we grade something, we restrict ourselves. So don't put measurement on it. You know, I mentioned earlier about us coming into this world, people, but we're like children coming to school. Well, you imagine when a child goes to kindergarten and sees all the toys and different objects that they can play with. That's what we're like coming into this life. There's all these things we can play. There'll be some children who don't want to play and are frightened to communicate. It really is like a school like that. So others will just immediately take to it and go, wow. And you know, it sets itself in that particular classroom, the different types of human being and the different personalities and attitudes that are starting to grow. And this life is just the same as that. But the one thing we can do, and I hope that people listening will understand this, we can always balance our attitude by not punishing ourselves. To have a good attitude. When something difficult happens, don't see it as the end of something. See it as the potential for other things to happen. Disappointment just brings potential, not end. You know, right, I'm going to now go and do this. And that's all it is. So don't beat yourselves up. Be kind to yourself. Remember, a big part of your spiritual journey is learning how to be kind. So being kind to others, you can't truly do that if you're not kind to yourself. So we must be kind to self. So stop telling yourself bad things. Better to say nothing than to keep reporting bad news to self. Self doesn't need to keep hearing that. Self does not need that. Self needs to be allowed to grow. So the inner child becomes you. And it's a little bit like C.G. Jung talked about us having two personalities, personality A and B. So in that, I see that as a little child. I was a little child and I played like a little child. But inside me, I had an adult voice that would question everything around me. This questioning little person. In my spiritual practice, personality A and B became one. So I don't have an inner voice so much these days. It's gone. I am the voice. And when I say something, it may sound spontaneous, but it's not. It's the oneness of mind. The oneness of mind tells you that you are appropriate in the way you do things. You don't judge yourself. You don't doubt yourself. You are. It's that simple. But you have to fuse the mind so that personality A and B can just become you. And be free of ideas that bring heaviness to your life. Honestly, spend a moment of the day in the light side of your mind, remembering how you love your children, remembering how you love your wife, your partner, remembering, or even your animals, how you love your dogs and cats. Take a moment to think of the love in your life. And if you ignore that, you're ignoring a big part of what makes you happy, guys. You've got to spend at least a part of your day going, oh, wow, look at my lovely life. Even if it's going through difficulties, I'm still here and I'm still challenging things. Be a force in your life. Do not be a defeatist. Be a force for you.
Thank you, Gordon. May this be a reminder for everybody who's listening to appreciate what's already here and maybe loosen the grip a bit on trying too hard, especially when it comes to the spirit world, letting experiences unfold. Thank you so much. There were so many different pieces in here that gave light into the darkness.
I love it, Jan. I love to chat to people. I really do. Let there be light.
Is there anything you would like to add at the end?
You know, for people, just strive to be happy. That's it. If you're going to strive for anything, be happy.
Thank you, Gordon, for your time, for your wisdom, for your laughter.
Cheers, John.
Thank you, everybody who was listening, and see you in the next episode.